Today we read another of the frightening passages in which Jesus describes the end times. In this case, he also is referring to the destruction of Jerusalem, the destruction of the temple, which took place in 70 AD. But by extension, he's talking about the end of time. And he speaks of this repeatedly, not so that we will be frightened, because he says people who experience these things will be so frightened that they'll die of fright. He says these things not so that we will not be frightened, but that we will be prepared. Be prepared for the passing away of what is earthly and for the coming of what is heavenly. So there's always two perspectives to the coming of the end. There's the tragic or sorrowful loss of what will pass away, and what seems to us like terrible cataclysms. And then there's the glorious arrival of the kingdom. But I'd like to focus more for this morning on today's first reading. We have this famous passage of Daniel in the lion's den. This is one passage for which Daniel is famous, that he survived the lions. This story is in parallel with the passage we heard earlier of the three young men who were cast into the fiery furnace. In both cases, faithful Jews are accused of violating the law and punished with capital punishment. They're executed, in one case by fire, in this case by being thrown to the lions. And in both cases, because of their fidelity to God, they are miraculously rescued. But in this case, it's not about eating food. The issue here is prayer. Daniel is accused of praying. This might sound strange to us, but actually not too long ago, this year, there were cases in England, I think in London, but certainly in England, where people were arrested for praying silently outside abortion clinics. Not saying anything, not holding placards, signs, not doing anything, standing silently on a public sidewalk, and they were arrested. And you say, well, what could possibly be the charge against them? I don't know. I don't know what the legal language is, but they were arrested because they were praying. They were daring to stand in or to interfere with the absolute license to abortion. Now, those cases, which come up every once in a while, are blatant violations of religious freedom. And this is what happens with Daniel. Daniel is praying in his own house, and his enemies charge in. You would think that's a violation of law, too, to be rushing into his room like that, uninvited, unwelcomed. But anyway, they rush into his upper chamber, his upper room, and they find him praying. And so then they turn him over to the king. And the king, who has been kind of manipulated into issuing a decree that no one, a royal decree, no one is to address a petition to God or man for 30 days except to the king. Now, that should strike us right away as an unjust law, because no one has authority over who or when someone prays. That's the most fundamental freedom of all, is religious freedom, because the most fundamental relationship of all is our relationship with God. So no one has authority to say, you're not allowed to pray to anyone for 30 days except to me. No one can say such a thing. But in the strange situation of the Medes and the Persians, and this is King Darius, the law established by a king, or a decree established by a king, is considered irrevocable. That too is a disorder. There is no such thing as an irrevocable human law. There are irrevocable laws, God's law, including God's moral law. Law against murder, for example, an obvious case, or against abortion, obvious case. law against blasphemy, law against perjury, law against rape, law against murder, adultery. I mean, sure, the Ten Commandments are irrevocable laws. No one has authority to change them because they come from God. But human laws are never essentially irrevocable. Now, in a political system, perhaps an executive branch has to submit to a legislative branch or something like that. There's always controversies about who has the last say. Recently in the United States, there's a controversy about some members of Congress have made statements that military officials are not obliged to obey illegal orders. That sounds pretty self-evident, but the question is, well, which orders are illegal and who has a right to say that they're illegal? And then you get into huge squabbles about who has the final say about military operations. Anyway, but this is not a case of that. In case of Daniel, the decree is by the king. It's irrevocable. It's so irrevocable that the king himself, who wants to save Daniel, can't do it. It says here that he was deeply grieved. He made up his mind to save Daniel. He worked till sunset to rescue him. The king who made the law couldn't even violate the law. Now, what's at work here is a exposure of the difference between human law and divine law, or between human realities, temporal realities, and divine realities. Yes, King Darius is all-powerful in his kingdom, except he's not. He can't even save Daniel. No one can save Daniel except God, and that's exactly what happens. Daniel gets thrown into the lion's den, sealed with the king's seal and the seals of all the lords, and he stays there all night long without being harmed. And he attributes his salvation to the Lord. The Lord rescued me from the lions. He wanted to show that I'm innocent before him, and I'm also innocent before you, O king. But what are we to make of this? We are in the week of Christ the King. We're in the week in which we are reaffirming our allegiance to God, to our absolute ruler, who is not only absolute in his power, but absolute in his love. In other words, we have a standard by which we can judge human laws, human authorities. We are not under an absolute rule of a tyrant or a king or any kind of a government, or the boss at work, or the head of the household, or anything. The absolute ruler is Jesus Christ, and he reigns with the Father. Anyone who disagrees with or opposes the reign of Jesus Christ, King of the universe, sets himself outside the realm of moral obligation. You don't have to follow people who are violating the law of God. And this gives us great freedom. It doesn't mean that we're free to do whatever we want, because we're obligated more deeply to submit to God. But it gives us great freedom from the expectations of our culture, or of our family, or of the government, or of anybody who comes along who wants to force us to do something. No. We can say yes or no based on whether we understand it to be according to God's will or not. And that's a beautiful place to be. So, we don't have to fear the end of the world because God's in charge. We don't have to fear the authorities, the powers that are over us, because God's in charge. And we don't have to fear any of the things we read about in the scriptures, because God's in charge and we belong to his eternal kingdom.